My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday Savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus Leaf Blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus Leaf Blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
What's going on, everybody? And welcome back to a brand new episode of season two of the Big Money Energy Podcast here on iHeartRadio. This is the podcast where I talk to people who literally went from nothing to something and how they did it. We talk to founders, influencers, celebrities, anyone that I'm inspired by who I think their story could inspire you as well. Today, we have Matt Kalish, who is one of the three co-founders of DraftKings, the biggest online fantasy sports and sports betting website ever. And Matt is awesome, like down to earth, super nice Boston guy from Lowell, grew up outside New Hampshire, just like me, right? When I used to take summers in New Hampshire, really, really, really cool story. And what we really hit on is not just the origin story, which we go through, but how having that one solid idea and knowing yourself honestly and knowing what you're good at, that's what I want you all to listen to. So you can hear from someone who's done it, how you too can figure out what you're good at and what's your thing so you can take that idea and take it to the stratosphere. So welcome to a brand new episode. I kind of want to go through like the origin. So you and a couple guys were working at Vistaprint, right?
That's correct, yeah.
How long did you work there?
Well, even before that, I met the current CEO of DraftKings, Jason Robbins, at Capital One, which was, it was my third job in corporate America, but I was maybe 2 years out of college. I had a couple short jobs, and then Capital One, I settled in. I had an analytics role.
Oh, nice. And the American dream.
Yeah.
Analytics at a bank. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Credit. It was a lending business. So, yeah, we were doing heavy numbers stuff, like Excel models and all this kind of data analytics and trying to make recommendations to, you know, marketing teams and stuff like that. So we were a couple of years into our career when we met, and we had a lot of things in common, like fantasy sports. We both played poker, and then, you know, just like softball and things like that would play together. So we spent a lot of time together.
Nice.
In addition to just being on a lot of the same projects in the company. So Jason was like my closest work friend pretty much coming up at Capital One. And then after 3 years or so, that business shut down, and then we moved to Vistaprint.
That part of the business at Capital One.
Yeah. They had like a specific lending business that we were a part of, and they just kind of wound it down.
Nice.
And so we ended up at Vistaprint, and that's where we met Paul. Paul Lieberman was our third piece of the puzzle that really brought together the team that started DraftKings.
Now, what did you go to school for?
I did computer science and economics. I had a double major.
I should have done that.
Yeah.
I would have totally failed out of college, but that's what I should have done.
Yeah. I had like a 2.7 GPA, but I took like heavy course load.
Yeah.
I always felt like I was wide and not too deep on any of my courses.
Sure.
So I got decent understanding, but I never failed anything. I got a D plus in, there's a class called graph theory. I got a D plus. That was like my senior year.
I love that you remember that. Yeah. Like the scar is still there.
Yeah. The teacher wrote a poem about graph theory.
Oh my God.
And it was just like, he was so hardcore and I just didn't take it as seriously as he wanted us to. So.
But it's memorable. You remember it. You're talking about it to this day. That poem, man, that you should NFT that.
Yeah.
You know, that thing is probably still out there. And so were you entrepreneurial as a kid? Did you ever want to start your own business or build something? Or did you go to school and think, hey, I'm going to go get a job?
No, I always like wanted to find ways to make my own money. My family was, both my parents met in the Navy. They didn't go to college.
Yeah.
And then after the Navy, my dad was a corrections officer and worked in a prison for 27 years.
Nice.
Maybe 28 years. And then he retired. My mom was a hairdresser, and then she worked for a parks and recreation department. You know, so they had these sort of blue collar jobs and never had that much money going around. So I was always looking for ways to make money.
Yeah.
First thing I did was I just started mowing the lawn of, I lived right next door to a 7-Eleven. I just like mowed the lawn one day, and then I went over and talked to the owners and was like, hey, if you need someone to mow your lawn, just let me know. I'm around. I live right next door. And so I started doing that, and I was making like $20 a week. Then as I got like a little older, I found, you know, a few little, like I was doing restaurant jobs and things like that. But by the time I got to college, what really caught my attention was poker, because I was like, this is a much more like intriguing way to make money to me.
Gambling.
It's math. It's strategy. It's game theory. I thought it was fun. So the way I found out about poker was Matt Damon's movie, Rounders.
Rounders, yeah.
I saw that movie right before I started my freshman year of college.
Okay.
And I was like, I'm going to be in trouble because I'm not going to be going to class much. I'm just going to play internet poker. So got to college freshman year, and I was splitting my time between, I was running track, classes, and then poker. And poker just started taking up more share of my life. You know, so
I see like
college.
Giovanni Ribisi in Boiler Room, you know, in the middle of the night running like his underground poker den down there.
Yeah. A lot of the people I would talk to, this was back in 2000 through 2004.
Yeah.
And so it's like AOL Instant Messenger was
nice.
A thing.
Yeah. Good old AIM.
Yeah. A lot of my friends, I would meet them playing poker, meet some people from New York, and we would meet up and just talk on AIM while we're playing, and then we'd meet up for games on Long Island and things like that.
What was your game? Hold'em?
Yeah, I started by learning Limit Hold'em because that was what was popular in 2000.
Sure.
And then it wasn't until like 03 when Chris Moneymaker won the World Series of Poker.
I remember that. The hat,
like
the glasses.
No Limit Hold'em. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And so I was learning a little bit of everything. And yeah, by end of college, I was really thinking, like, should I play poker? Should I get a job?
Was that a real thing?
Yeah, I almost like didn't get a job and played poker. And then
did you think you might like move to Vegas and just like do it for real? Or are you going to do internet poker?
I was going to do like internet poker.
Got it.
And I probably would have, but my mom, I just thought like wouldn't have really thought very highly of that. And so I was like, I'm going to keep playing, but do it at night and get a real job.
Yeah.
So I had a few jobs that I didn't like. One was in engineering. One was, it was kind of like operations, I guess, but it was at Fidelity Investments doing benefits.
Yeah.
You know, like Verizon or something do their benefits through Fidelity.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like
good
an
Boston
operations
company.
Job.
Yeah.
Both jobs I didn't like. And then corporate analytics, though, I did because it had a lot of the poker, you know. Like you're looking through incomplete data, you're trying to figure out, you know, trends or get insights from data. And then
and that was Capital One.
Yeah, at Capital One. And I was good at that because like just poker conditions you to like look at the data you have, evaluate it, make quick decisions. You
have
know?
Strategy.
And
yeah.
There's also the accountability, like you're really making money or you're really losing money. And there's like a balance sheet of life there that Like, you can't just be terrible and then, you know, keep going. Like, you're going to eventually run out of your bankroll if you're not making good decisions.
What's the most amount of money you've ever made playing poker?
Oh, God.
Like, was there that like one
around
game?
25K.
Okay.
Yeah. Never anything too insane.
So then Capital One, that division you're working at, shuts down. You guys go to Vistaprint. You meet the third party to your, like, fabulous trifecta. But did you know that you were going to start your own company, or you were just, hey, this is the next job? And, like, what was that genesis? When did that conversation happen?
Yeah, like, we knew we were going to do something for sure.
And along the lines of sports
at least
betting?
Jason and I, and then wasn't as sure if Paul. Paul had, like, a higher bar to actually quit. And where I stood on it was I was almost 30 years old. I had done 7 or 8 years in corporate America. It was my fourth job. And I was, you know, if you just do your balance sheet again of life, I was like, okay, I'm making whatever, $70,000, $75,000, $80,000 a year. Then there's taxes, then, you know, house, all this stuff. Like, you start taking it all out and you're not really saving anything.
Yeah.
I was paying off student loans and I had $9,000 and I was like almost 30 years old. And so Jason and I were like, the corporate thing isn't really going well. You know, we don't feel like we're getting where we want. And we also just had that drive to do something on our own and we're waiting for the right idea. Paul jumped in, you know, very similar. He was just waiting for something like special enough that it sure. was worth it. So, you know, he wasn't going to quit and start like a fast food franchise or something. That just like wasn't where his head was at. He wanted like something that could be
huge.
Big.
Yeah.
And so we started talking about this idea for DraftKings, which was fantasy sports. It was right after internet poker kind of fell to the side in the U.S. We're like, fantasy sports is really interesting because people love doing these drafts. You can do it potentially every day. What if you just like reformatted it a little where you're drafting every day? You're playing just for one day and you're playing against your friends or maybe against like thousands of people for big prizes. You know, that's pretty cool.
And you're just inventing this in conversation.
Yeah.
Like just like a total what if situation.
Yeah. It was like, what if we just built this thing that was, you know, not easily solved, like kind of a skill game around fantasy.
And so the thing, when you talk about the thing is the website, right? And then, but the machine behind it. And you're the computer engineer. That's what you went to school for. But it's the three of you, like at night, you're going to work during the day, and then at night you're coding. Is that what's really started it?
Yeah, we fell into roles really quickly, which basically all of us learned something relatively new. Paul wrote the code for our site. Paul was like not a software engineer, but he knew some stuff.
Okay.
I think he did electrical engineering and he was an analyst and he just started reading books and figured out how to write code. He wrote our prototype. It was C++ or something.
Yeah.
And then we started doing investor pitches. Jason Robbins had to learn how to go do like a fundraise. So he went out and started like building a pipeline.
So you immediately wanted to raise money?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say within 3 or 4 months, we figured out if we don't raise money, we're never getting this off the ground.
Got it. Did you know how much it was going to take you to get it off the ground? Like how much were you looking to raise at the beginning?
I feel like a lot of people do this, but we had a really stupid model. Like it was, we thought we needed way less and it was like, I don't know. $300,000 or something.
To like build the first site and kind of get everything running.
Yeah. Our first pitch deck said we need to raise like 300K and it will be profitable in like 6 months and all this stuff. And then we ended up raising 1.2 million. We did 40 pitches probably. There was 30, 35 no's. A couple of people were like, call me back if you have a lead for your round, but they didn't want to lead it.
And this is just seed money, right? You're just looking for people to help you start.
Yeah, just like we were showing them our prototype.
And it's just the three of you.
Yeah.
And what was the prototype? Like a wireframe?
Yeah, it was not an app. It was a website. And we would just load it up. It had a little bit of functionality, not much. There wasn't like live data from sports pumping into it. It was all like placeholder data.
Just the idea.
Yeah.
And a 99 design logo.
Yeah. And Paul, I can't overemphasize that he was not an engineer, so he didn't really know how to write code. So the site would just get the blue screen of death sometimes on investor pitches. And like it was just broken. But it like worked enough. And he was getting better over the months and just like cleaning up and learning. And so
it's just the three of you.
Yeah, it was just the three of us. And then after we got line of sight to raising money, we brought on our fourth, you know, our first non-us employee.
And who was that?
That was somebody named Blake Dunkel, who is an engineer, like a real coder.
Like a real one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone who could come in and help you build this whole thing. So when did DraftKings first go live?
We went live in April 2012.
Yeah.
That was for baseball. And it was April 27th, which is Paul's birthday. And I think he like deliberately launched it on his birthday. Even if we could have went sooner, he was like, I just want it to be on my birthday. So he you know, lined up all the stuff. And that's when we went live.
And how was that first couple months?
It was good. So at that time, there was probably like six or seven competitors that we knew of that were doing fantasy, that were in the market, doing something like kind of similar to what we were.
Sure.
But nothing was big at all. Maybe like tens of thousands of people at the most had ever like tried, like 10 or 20,000.
Right.
And so we came in and it wasn't like just get people, you know, who are already in the market to try it. You had to literally explain what the thing was.
And educate people to like, come here.
Yeah, yeah, it was tough. And so our first day we had 107 registered users, I think.
Nice.
And we just did a free game where we gave away $100. That's all for baseball. And it was a combination of like people that had heard of the industry and just like stumbled upon social media posts or friends told them, or we posted on some forums, but like random mix of 107 people that kind of stumbled in. And, you know, we were asking our friends to spread the word and everything, and, you know, didn't invest any marketing for a couple months, you know, so we were just really doing it.
Total word of mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. We would just start doing emails. We had like free games that people could jump in.
Nice.
And then we started testing some stuff on, you know, like Facebook, digital marketing and stuff, probably July, something like in June or July. So it took a few months. And yeah, we had to clean up our product a little bit, made some changes, but we felt like by July we were okay investing a little bit, and we were really just getting ready for football season, which was, you know,
so that's why you did baseball first, because you were launching it in the spring, gearing up to then bring football in.
Yeah, that's, it wasn't even that strategic. That's just like when we were okay. ready.
Basically. In the telling, it's like there's strategy. Mm-hmm. So then why'd you choose baseball first? Yeah.
When they write the story about DraftKings, sometime in the future, they can say it was like very strategic, but yeah. It wasn't. Yeah. So we launched when we were ready, and that was baseball. And then, you know, we had a few months to build our football product, get that all lined up. And, you know, we had at that point enough insight into like a little bit of marketing that we could turn on the faucet a little bit.
Nice.
And yeah, by the end of the year, we had something in the range of $4.5 million of revenue in 2012. So we went from just starting at nothing to, you know, a few million bucks of revenue.
Crazy. And just in case anyone who's listening doesn't know exactly, how does DraftKings generate revenue, or how did it generate revenue back then?
It's just the difference between like entry fees into a contest and what gets paid out.
Get
so
it.
On average, it's like around 10% in fantasy is what our revenue is. And then at that time, though, a lot of the time we would just be we wouldn't get enough entry fees, and there was like more prizes than the entry fees.
Got it.
So sometimes it was even like we'd run a contest that we lost money on, but it was all part of just building.
Yeah, sure.
You know, our audience, building the business up.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health 8 kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having pink lady apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
So then 2013 was just adding more sports, right?
Yeah, we added sports. A couple big things. We did a deal with Major League Baseball. It was like the first league deal in our space. And that was the first time.
In fantasy, in your space, ever.
Yeah.
Like, you guys were the first.
Yeah. And we were thinking, like, wow, this is great. Major League Baseball. Yeah. Like, never would have thought that quickly we would have got support. But the data around fantasy is really compelling. Like, people really watch a lot of sports when they're playing fantasy.
Yeah.
And they watch
it. They need to watch all the teams.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're just watching the score and it's 40-7, like the Patriots last week was like 45-7. Yeah. Nobody's watching that if you just want to know who's going to win the game. But like, if you're in fantasy, then you're watching, like, is Mac Jones running up, 300 plus pass yards and another touchdown and whatever. And it all adds up to your score. So people just keep watching. And the leagues understand, the fantasy player is probably like their best, that's the best segment customer of their audience, So wanted to make some investments in building up fantasy, and Major League Baseball really went first. So 2013, we did that deal. Another thing was we did an acquisition, which was we were the third biggest probably fantasy provider, and we bought a company called Draft Street, which was based in New York. They had maybe 20, 25 employees. We had probably 40. So suddenly we like doubled the team size, and we about doubled our customer base, doubled our revenue. So by the end of 2013, we had, it was like $30 million of revenue from 4 the year before.
Crazy.
And, that also meant our prizes got bigger. So it was like more attractive of an offering. So that deal made it where it was kind of us and our main competitor, FanDuel, were really rivals from that point forward.
And what was your specific role during this whole time? Right. Like, what was like your day to day?
I've taken on a lot of different roles, and all of it has always been sort of customer facing and in market. But early on, I was building sort of product specs and operating the games themselves. So literally like in 2012, 2013, 2014, I was like coming up with the salaries for the players that people were drafting. Like, Tom Brady is, $8,900 and, Aaron Rodgers is $7,800 and whatever, right? Like, doing that. And I had a team that I started building up that, had a lot of expertise in each of the sports we were doing. And over time, it was less reliant on me. But early on, I was making them in an Excel spreadsheet. And then I was, like, uploading them into a database and doing a bunch of that. I was doing our email marketing personally. It's like making templates and, filling them in and trying to drive interest. By 2014, I spent almost an entire year building an analytics team. So we had all just like marketing and operators. And 2014, I pretty much focused entirely on analytics and just building up that practice. And then by end of 2015, I was back into like a heavy operational, like product operations role, driving the fantasy business again. What that's developed into now is we just keep offering more products. So like the role just keeps scaling with, not to jump ahead too fast, but
all the products that you guys offer,
just like quite scalable to just keep bringing on experts in each of the products we want to offer and keep the same core like relationship between Jason, Paul, and I.
What does it feel like to go from, Capital One to having this idea for sports betting to now building this massive, massive business that's now public, where you're known by millions of people around the world, on top of millions. Like, do you ever sit and think and just say, like, how did this all come to be? Or is it just like, hey, we worked really, really hard. We had a cool idea and it worked.
Yeah, weird. It's definitely strange to think about the...
like the impact.
We have over 10 million U.S. customers now in our database that we serve. And I just think about the number, like, that's a lot of people. That's a lot of people. Yeah, you think about the scale of... like how many people have ever tried the thing that we built? And that's probably like the thing I think about the most. It's just like very few companies ever get to the point where that many people like try the thing that you've worked on.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the fact that we've gotten that many people to try the product and that generally like the feedback is so positive and we have such an exciting roadmap to like looking forward, so many ways to expand the relationship with our audience.
Yeah.
Like those things are, it's like jaw dropping, but also keep us very busy, you know?
I'm sure.
Like when we think about DraftKings like strategy or what we want to do next at any given point in time, it always starts with one idea, which is like, okay, we have a large audience of what we call skin in the game sports fans. It's mm-hmm. like people that don't just watch the TV, you know, they don't watch the game on TV with no rooting interest. They like to predict things. They're playing fantasy or doing sports bets. They want to like bet against their friends, different forms. Like everybody has preferences, yeah. like parlay bettors or people who like fantasy more. But, you know, that is our core audience. It's like a risk reward type audience, right? And there's a lot of things that those people are interested in that aren't just what we're doing today. You know,
sure.
We recently launched DraftKings Marketplace, which is like an NFT platform
this summer
for collectibles. And all of this is driven by just insight into who our customer is. And we believe like we could represent a decent share of like the kind of recreational time, the attention that gets sprayed everywhere if we just continue to understand our audience and build things that they're spending their time on.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
What advice would you give to any aspiring entrepreneur? Like, what have you learned in your journey now, right? Which is now almost basically like this year from when you guys started, you know, next year is we're coming up on your 10-year anniversary, right? In April 2022 of DraftKings. So you've been, this entrepreneur has built this massive company over the last 9 years. Like, what's something that you've taken away that you wish you had known back then that would be good for other people to know?
A couple of things. Like, first, just being honest with yourself about what you can do, what you do best, what your your interests are in terms of what you want to do in the future. For example, like, I don't want to be the CEO of a company ever. So I'm just not, who knows, but like, I don't think I'll ever do that. And I just don't think that's an attractive job. And it's actually kind of awful to me. Like, when I look at, you know, the job of being a CEO, it sucks.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't want to do that. I want to be customer facing. I want to work on projects that I think are like awesome. I want to be like, be the customer, you know, be in market. So like, if you're not honest about what you want to do, you can find yourself in like, oh, I have a great business idea, so I guess that means I'm the CEO of it. And like, no, it doesn't. That's not what it, the original idea of doing DraftKings I came up with, right? But I talked to Jason, talked to Paul, we quickly Norman to rules. I'm like, I would never want to be the CEO of DraftKings. I just wouldn't, you know, I love what I do. I have like the best job in the world. And Jason has, to him, the best job in the world, right? It's like, you just have to be honest about the role that you really want to play. And if it's not that, then don't. Like, you can always team up with the right people.
Sure.
I would say, like, if you're a tech business, you really want to have a tech founder. That's another thing. Like, Paul figured this out and we were flying close to the sun, but, a lot of people with tech ideas, like they want to create an app or something.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, I'll outsource the coding. We don't know how to do the coding. We have a product idea we want to do. Try to outsource it. It's just not a thing. Like, you really want to have a tech founder that you get engaged.
Who understands it.
Yeah. And the last thing is, like, always be willing to give up some equity. Like, don't be afraid to give up some equity to get people engaged in your idea. So often, I think it's like, people want to own 90% or whatever of their company, and you might end up owning 90% of
nothing,
whatever, like a $3 million company, when it could be you own 5% of a multi-billion dollar company one day, right? So it's like, I know there's different scales here, but if you can get somebody committed to like helping you on your project, and you think that they can help you and they're willing to do it, and all that's between making that happen is some equity in your company, like, just give them the equity, you know, give up a little bit of equity to get people engaged. And, you know,
what's DraftKings valuation right now? Like $3.3 billion, something like that.
That was when we went public. Now we're in the teens somewhere.
Oh, really?
In the teens.
I'm way off.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. It's been quite nice. But yeah, when we did our deal to go public.
Well, yeah, we went live, right?
That's all
right,
the media said it was like a $3.3 billion
and in
deal.
A year, it's quintupled. I mean, like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Nuts. Good thing sports came back.
Yeah. Well, I think it's also DraftKings have a really interesting profile because it's a giant industry. We're serving a customer that is like very coveted, an amazing customer base, you know, and it's a founder-led company where we still drive the operation. The vision that we've had is, it's not like a private equity company coming in and taking it over and executing. And that's what a lot of like our current competition looks like, right? It's an entrepreneurial company driven by founders who still control 80-90% of the teams, report to me or Paul or Jason.
Yeah.
And we control the roadmap. We did go public, but we have, you know, we have the reins on bringing our vision to life. And I think a lot of investors find that really attractive. Like, the idea of like these founder-led, if you think about some of the most valuable tech companies in the world.
Yeah, they're the people
for
that
for the most part,
it,
they're founder-led. Yeah, it's founder-led, founder-controlled. So the thinking is like, okay, well, if they got their vision here in 9 years, what's going to happen 30 years from now? It's going to be an awesome company.
Yeah.
So as long as you keep being sort of right often enough, executing well, having the right proof points, building credibility, I think we'll, you know, continue to see a lot of success, hopefully, you know.
How proud are your parents?
Quite proud. My dad actually got me into, like, the way I learned a lot about math was from my dad.
Oh, really?
Because he would show me stuff like blackjack, for example.
It's
like, here's when you hit, here's when you don't. And then we're like, why? Why don't I hit on 17? That's not a good number. He's like, well, you don't, because it's like
the chances,
you know, three cards in the deck are good and 10 are bad and one is a, you know, 20. So whatever, he would explain it simple. And then as I was getting older, it would be like, okay, I'm actually like 16.7% of this or whatever to get this. So yeah, he would, we would go to like watch horse racing. We would do pick'em pools at his work, stuff like that. So he got me into that kind of gaming that then became how I learned math and how to apply math. And then when I got into poker, he was kind of like right there with me. We were both playing, you know, something to talk about. So being like this far along as an operator of a business that's like aligned with our passions like that, he just absolutely loves it. You know, he lives in Seabrook and we have a DraftKings sportsbook in Seabrook, New Hampshire. So he just like goes, hangs out there sometimes. Just like, hey, my son is like, he's like at DraftKings. You know? And my dad's like a military guy and worked in a prison. So it's like he just hangs out with his friends who are cops and stuff like that at the sports book. It's fun. So it's become like a decent part of the lifestyle of our family and really special.
I think my last question for you, and this has been really, really awesome. So thank you for taking the time is what's something about DraftKings that people don't know? What's something that might have happened in the last couple of years or in the process to going public or in the founding that like no one has any idea because you haven't told them yet?
I don't know about something nobody, I wonder if anybody really knows this, probably very few, if anyone. But a lot of the time when you're raising money, deals aren't like done until they're done, right? Like until it's literally like your money's in the bank, deals aren't done.
Oh, I know.
And I remember this was like probably 5 years ago, we were raising money. It's like our Series C, we probably
just
had
for
like,
expansion into higher people. Yeah, you need
we're
more
a private
cash.
Company and whatever. So we probably had like a month of runway on the company. We had a deal all lined up.
A month,
probably something like that. And we're also about to go into football season where we really want to be in market investing, growing our audience. So we're like, okay, round's in good shape, whatever. Then like lead dropped out probably 2 weeks before our runway was out. Jason like somehow figured out a way in 3 days to raise the same amount of money at a higher price with 2 weeks of runway.
With new people?
led by a new outside investor and multiple insiders. So it was like, like just figured out a way to still raise the capital on a higher valuation somehow, which is just
had
insane.
That not happened, what would have happened in 2 weeks?
It would have been fine. We would have probably like needed some bridge money and figured it out. But like,
that's tight though.
You never know until it's done. It's not done. So it's like a really interesting kind of aspect of fundraising. It's probably like closing a deal on a house too. You know, it's like you have a
definitely
deal
not
and
done
like,
until it's closed. Yeah,
it's
that's
like
for sure.
Kind of done, but like things fall apart all the time too, right? And so you have a plan B, right? And it's
insane.
Never done.
Big Money Energy is hosted by me, Ryan Serhan. It's produced by Mike Coscarelli and Joe Laresca and executive produced by Lindsay Hoffman. Find more podcasts like Big Money Energy on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light. Catch all 7 rounds, 3 days, live from Detroit, April 25th to 27th, with NFL Network Draft coverage presented by Verizon. and on ABC, ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and streaming on NFL Plus. It all starts Thursday, April 25th at 8 p.m. Eastern. Visit NFL.com/draft for more information. Rocket Mortgage, official partner of the NFL Draft.